And a good morning, everybody, and welcome to our first ever interview on Clubhouse. And we appreciate everybody jumping in here. We'll explain how it works in just a bit, and we'll get to our two guests in a moment as well. First, we wanted to tell you about something that Radio Inc. and the Podcast Business Journal have just put together that will be launching in July. July 12th, 13th, and 14th, we have a brand new three-day virtual podcasting conference that we're launching, the two publications. It's going to be all about making money. It's not going to be a Zoom panel of four or five guests where it's always hard to get in a lot of good information when they're 30 or 40 minutes and so many guests. And sometimes with the Zoom setup, people will be talking over each other. We're going to have one-on-one interviews on the second and third day of the conference with podcasters that are making money, with folks that have created companies for podcasters that are making money. It's going to be 30-minute interviews, one right after another, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on July 13th and 14th. The first day, let me make sure I have those dates right. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in July. And the first day is going to be about the basics. The first day is going to be about hosting and about editing and about equipment and about how to launch, when to launch, all of that. It's going to be interview one right after another, starting 11 o'clock. So for 3 days in August, all the information, you can see the dates, and you can actually sign up for email updates on the conference right now. If you go to radioinc.com, you're going to see that that information up there soon. But on our Facebook page, it's there now. And on our Twitter page, all you need to do is go to either one of those social media pages, and you can register for email updates on the show. The complete website with the agenda is going to be put up shortly, maybe next week, and you'll be able to see some of the speakers. And we've been spending the last week to 10 days lining up all the speakers for that conference that is coming up in July. It's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And I promise it's not going to start at 6 o'clock on the West Coast like we are right now. And I want to introduce our two guests. And the reason I say that is because Salem Media's David Santrella is on the West Coast. David, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ed. Great to be here. And I have my Starbucks Grande in hand.
Great, great. And Tom Langmeyer is also with us. And Tom is from the Great Lakes Media. He's the CEO of Great Lakes Media. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Ed. And I didn't have to get up quite as early. I'm actually on Eastern time, but I still have my coffee.
Great, great. And I wanted to make sure everybody knew that just joined us late. We are recording this for those that... if you don't have an iPhone, you can't be listening to it live, because right now the Clubhouse app is only available for iPhone users. So we wanted to make sure folks like John David, who still have a flip phone, are able to listen to the interview that we're going to have with our guest today at a future time. Actually, I'm just kidding. It looks like John is in the room there. And as we go along with this interview, folks, if you decide that you want to ask a question, the way it works is, on your app, you can raise your hand, and I can see it on my phone that you've raised your hand and you'd like to ask a question, and that I can pull you up on stage with David and Tom, and you can ask them the question yourself. But the first thing I want to ask David and Tom is, what do you think of this new technology? It's something brand new, the social media app with just audio, no video. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have to tell you, this is actually my first participation in a Clubhouse event. And I was a little nervous about it, but I love it. I love the fact that right now we're chatting and I'm looking and seeing a lot of people that are in the room, and it's a really efficient way to communicate. I love it so far.
Yeah, from my end, I'm a huge believer in using any and all tools that we can to make the radio experience bigger and better. So it's important to note that these are tools. And their communication platform. So it's important to make the distinction between the actual experience and the content from, you know, a platform. But as people who are in the content business, whether it's advertising based or it's listener support, doesn't really matter. You know, we're really actually very lucky to have these tools, and Clubhouse is a really good one. It helps us, I think, better form an emotional bond and a connection like really no one else can do. simply because we actually, you know, sort of have the bigger piece, which is radio. And then we can take people, you know, on a great content experience ride. So I just happen to understand. I happen to be an advocate for local radio and local connecting experiences. So I really look at this more like building that tribal relationship and, you know, creating a more, I guess, close and unique bond with the listener or user.
Have either one of you been able to think about how this technology might be able to be used in what you guys do, running radio stations?
Yeah, you can't help wonder if this is not an extension of podcasting, where it becomes kind of an opportunity to introduce new talent to the marketplace. You know, I don't know yet what the rules are, how long a Clubhouse session can go. But I mean, is this the next place where somebody would be doing a 2-hour long talk show, you know, and kind of being almost maybe where your farm team starts out?
Tom?
Yeah. You know, I look at this, you know, very similarly with, you know, podcasting as an example, or social media and all the other tools that we have. And I was just thinking about this. The first time I was engaged in podcasting was, you know, around, it's been around for 15 years. I was working with it a long time ago. It's hard to believe that that's been around that long. But, you know, I think that, you know, this is another thing that can make the radio experience that much better. And we can, you know, specialize in certain conversations and content. I think about it in sales applications. I mean, there's just so much. It's really up to us in terms of, you know, do we look at it as a disruptor, or, you know, do we look at it as an opportunity? I think it's an opportunity for sure.
You know, one of the things I was tooling around listening to shows, there's a lot from the podcasting industry. I haven't really been able to find one on the radio side yet, but there was a lot from the podcasting side of things. The audio quality isn't the greatest. It really, in some cases, does sound like a conference call on a telephone. I don't know how this one sounds. Ours could sound just as bad. I tried to hook up a microphone to, I have a Rodecaster Pro and a microphone, so hopefully it sounds a little better. But do you think the quality of sound will matter?
I do, and I think much like podcasting, right? There's podcasts and then there's podcasts. So the podcasters that are doing it in a studio that's got, you know, soundproofing, a good quality mic, you know, they sound infinitely better than the podcast that somebody's doing, you know, in their basement on, you know, an old Radio Shack microphone. And so I think, again, right now Clubhouse has some technological limitations that are going to limit that. And I think that's something that they're going to need to improve. But eventually I think it will, you know, have the opportunity to be as good as the presenter wants to make it.
Yeah, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. You know, from my end, I think that there's a different world that we look at. And, you know, what are we looking for? What is it that we're looking for from an experience on Clubhouse? And I think that that's, you know, probably a little bit more raw. I think it's okay. Is the sound quality important? I think it's an issue for sure. I think it falls, you know, fairly close, but I think still leading is what is the experience like? What are we there to do? And then if we can create, you know, a better, you know, situation in terms of sound, I think that that's, you know, obviously important. We're obviously also in the audio content business. I kind of liken it to, you know, when people were doing YouTube videos and those kinds of things early on, and it was much more raw and it was real that way. So I do think that there's an element that, you know, I think we can give it a little bit of a pass in terms of the audio quality and really focus on what is the experience that we're getting out of it. At least, you know, my experiences with it have been that the audio is certainly particularly when you're using an iPhone or, you know, smartphone, that it's been so far, you know, decent enough.
One of the things that I feel like is missing is you can see all the folks that are in the room there. You can see their faces, and it'd be nice. There's no social media interaction like there would be if you were doing a Facebook Live or something like that, where you can actually see what people are thinking, or they could throw in their witty comments as you're going along. And I don't know if that's something that they can throw in there, but I found that, you know, when you're doing a podcast and you're shooting it out on Facebook Live or on YouTube, you can interact with the people as the show's going on, and that's really a cool element to have.
Do you think that is disruptive to the experience, Ed, or do you think it's actually a more supplementary kind of thing for people to kind of go offline and have their own little discussions in between? Or
Sometimes we do a podcast on Saturday mornings, and sometimes I find it's helpful. They'll be saying things that. That you can interact, you can interject into the show, or maybe a fact that you didn't have while you're interviewing your subject. And I found it to be, you know, it can always be distracting, but sometimes I think it's very helpful. David?
Yeah, I think the clubhouse that we see today and the clubhouse that we'll see
right.
a year from now will be a very different experience. Right now, I look at it, I think the fact that they don't have a link to LinkedIn is a miss.
Right.
I think from a business perspective, there's a lot that of audio, for instance, that could be captured here that could then be shared on your LinkedIn and use it as a you know, networking tool, recruiting tool, you know, just some sort of a sharing tool. And that's, I think, a miss right now. And again, I think, you know, there was a great book I read a few years ago called The Lean Startup. And the premise of the book is that we can make a lot of critical assumptions, but then the users will actually tell us how they're going to use it. You know, how they use it will teach us what we're right about and what we're wrong about. And I think, you know, Clubhouse will learn that and figure out how they want to change and metamorphosize this into something that's a more useful tool.
So let's move on. Before we talk about the radio outlook, I wanted to ask you a quick question about podcasting, because you both mentioned it. Are you finding that you're able to generate decent revenue in podcasting, enough to spend time on it, so that you can really put that in the win column?
We are at Salem. We launched the Salem Podcast Network in November. Well, first off, I should say Salem, you know, like Tom said, podcasting has been around for a long time. And Salem started years ago, years and years and years ago, a subscriber-based podcast to the Dennis Prager Show, Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, all of our network offerings, basically their network radio show with the commercials stripped out on a subscription basis. And that, to this day, generates a very good amount, a very respectable amount of money for the company. But more recently, we launched the Salem Podcast Network. We launched that with Dinesh D'Souza, Charlie Kirk. We have some other big names that we'll, you know, be announcing shortly. And even with just those two, it has been immensely successful for us, incredibly financially successful for us. So we obviously see a lot of promise in it. I think in Salem's case, the goal is to make sure that we're true to who we are. Yeah, if you're iHeart or Cumulus or Entercom or Great Lakes, for instance, you know, you're appealing to a diverse audience group, and so you might have to have podcasts that appeal to that diverse audience group and have everything from the, you know, the Fix It Show podcast to some sort of a news podcast. I always describe what we're doing as it's a fine wine store. You know, what Salem is doing on the podcast network is a fine wine store. You go in there expecting to find certain things and not expecting other things to be in there. And we have to live up to both of those expectations. You need to be able to come into the Salem Podcast Network and find great quality Christian and politically conservative content by the best communicators of those subjects, period, and not stray or be, you know, kind of swayed into the idea of, oh, let's do a cool, you know, podcast on some other thing that our audience is not interested in. And quite frankly, we're not good at that. We're way better at sticking to the core of what we normally do.
I think that Dave's right on the money there in terms of being true to, you know, what it is that you're all about. You know, obviously looking at this from a slightly different perspective, because I, you know, and we're in an acquisition mode right now, and we are the companies and markets that we're looking at. You see different ways and means of reporting podcasting revenue. I think it's really important to look at it from a global standpoint. If you did not have it, what would your overall revenue look like? You know, no matter what buckets you choose to put it in, I think that it's a it's a great tool. And you know, Dave talked about some specific uses that tie very specifically to different formats and different brands. You know, I've seen increases in it, and you listen to the quarterly calls from companies, and obviously it's something that is not specifically generating a great deal of revenue on the overall standpoint. It's certainly a very important and growing tool, you know, that we have, you know, moving forward. So I would tell you that also it seems that people in Wall Street and advertisers that I've spoken to are extremely high on it. And sometimes you need to actually educate them on your brand and how you use it and the things that you do, the things that it does and the things that it doesn't do, you know, need to be clarified, and you need to kind of lead and teach how that works. And I kind of look at it as, you know, you've got these platforms and tools, and you're basically trying to create the best, you know, multimedia experience you can that's radio based. So it's kind of like having a camera, you know, when you're looking at podcasting and Clubhouse and all these other things. But with this camera, you can actually change the lens. You know, you might want, you know, it might be a panorama. Mm-hmm. And you do a general shot. Then you, maybe it's a close up, and maybe it's even an extreme close up with your audience with just a few people. You know, and then down to, you know, that takes it down to a group of listeners that can be part of a more intimate experience, depending on what you're doing. So I think anything that you can do, you obviously have to put, you know, put it up against a P&L for sure. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that, you know, it's much bigger. We have to look at it as part of a necessary and important experience and a way to connect with our audiences better.
Great stuff. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, and I do think, you know, what Tom talked about there from a financial perspective is important. You know, I think one of the hardest things that all of us have to manage right now is, you know, the amount of resources and time and attention we give to certain initiatives based on their relative financial, you know, addition to our companies. I mean, still far and away, I would think, certainly for Salem, and I would think for a lot of other companies, like on our most recent Q4 call, we talked about the fact that 28% of our revenues now come from digital. That's great. And it's fantastic. But that means 72% of our revenue still comes from broadcast. And last time I checked, 72% is a really big number. So, you know, so we have to have that balance between making sure that we don't, you know, abandon our creative thought process or the resources that go with that on the thing that brought us to the dance and remains, you know, the biggest part of our financial equation. And quite frankly, for Salem's case, the biggest part of our mission, that being what we do with our broadcast assets. And yet at the same time, we have to look at these digital initiatives like podcasting, like local digital advertising agencies, as all growth engine aspects, because that is going to fuel revenue growth for us. And that's why there has to be a proper balance between both of those things.
And for those folks that just joined us in the room here, you can raise your hand and ask a question if you'd like. You should have a raise your hand button on your app there, and then we can pull you up on stage and you could actually ask it yourself. by doing that. So if anyone has a question for David Santrella from Salem or Tom Langemeyer, sorry, Tom, from Great Lakes, just raise your hand. We'll pull you up there. Before we get on to the radio outlook, what you were talking about digital, David, sparked another question. Can you guys explain to me why radio station websites are so awful? I mean, why do you have to have videos that automatically start and banners that make your eyes bug out and things flashing? And it's so unuser-friendly.
Well, I guess I'll go first on this. You know, it's first off, right, the old saying, right, the shoemaker always has the worst shoes, right? It's really interesting, and certainly it's a metamorphosis that we're going through at Salem. In all transparency, if you looked at Salem's corporate website a few years ago and you look at our website today, it's a completely different website. Because initially, I think a lot of these websites, at least for the radio station, were developed by committee, and so you had a handful of very sharp general managers that got together with the smart digital guy with the lab coat on, and they would say, you know, it'd be really cool if we had this, would be really cool if we had this. And what you ended up with was this website that was, you know, quote unquote, really cool. Yes. But then of course the data told you where people are really going. What does the user of that website really care about? And so I think now, at least in our case, we're in the process of discovering that and making changes based on, again, what's the customer telling us? Because how the customer uses the product tells you a lot about how you should shape the product. And so that's really kind of where we're going. But I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of times websites are, for radio stations in particular, are just a disaster. And try and find what you're looking for, you can't. And so it needs to change.
Well, the good news, David, about that is the newspapers are 10 times worse. So you do have that. The newspaper websites, by the time everything starts floating with the ads and the video, there's only a small sliver of space to be able to read any of the content. Tom, anything you want to add about that before we...
I think David makes a really good point specifically about the process by which... websites have been developed, and obviously depends on, companies, and some of them are more standardized and some of them in local markets, may actually tend to look like like the paper menu that you have in a diner with 300 little things about, companies that pump your basement out and whatever. But, there has to be somebody that's actually leading the vision of what this all should look like. And, then the parts then fall in behind that. But, there are certainly some great examples of, I think, very good and effective websites out there. And, WTOP in Washington is a good one, for example. When you look at that, and then you can compare it to others that might be more like the restaurant menu in a small town diner. And I think that Dave also makes a really good point, specifically about the fact that we in the business have had to kind of feel our way through the room without seeing, the same way that we can with these instant metrics that can help us adjust as we go along the course in terms of what things work and what things don't work in the digital experience. So these are great tools.
I remember the first time somebody showed me Flash technology, and he said, "Man, this is cool. Isn't that really cool?" And I said, "Yeah, it's cool, but is the website going to take 4 minutes to load every time somebody gets on there to see what's going on?" But things have certainly come a long way. So let's move on to the radio questions. And Tom, let's start with you. How does 2021 look so far to you, and what are your advertisers saying?
Well, obviously I'm looking at it again from a different standpoint because it's really anecdotal from group heads and people in the cluster level that, that I've been speaking with. By many accounts, it looks good, but it's really important to understand that we don't have the full comps for Q2. That's really when the pandemic kicked in this year. So, but definitely seeing some recovery. And how long it takes, we really don't know. We just don't know, but we do know, or at least I have a firm belief that we will continue to see things rebound. I mean, we've really learned so much during this period. And I will say from the overall business standpoint, radio overall, you know, we've in this past year have learned and actually built an entirely new infrastructure. So, you know, completely different from how a radio station or a cluster operates. So, you know, I look at it differently. I look at this very positively. I mean, we would have been tearing this Band-Aid off painfully for years, but instead, you know, the business has necessarily made us jump ahead, or the pandemic, by leaps and bounds. So, you know, some of that pain is actually turns things into great positivity. Radio, of course, isn't alone. I know that. But, you know, you think about the general entertainment businesses, restaurants, other services, think about what they're up against. They've suffered major impact, and radio's actually been able to be a real constant through this process. You know, and I don't know if you want to talk about ad recovery. Maybe we want to wait on that, but you know, it's that as far as that goes. You know, we're looking at a political year last year, mm-hmm. So we have to really kind of peel back the onion to really understand what that looks like.
So David, why don't you take that? Tell us how the advertisers are, you know, how they're doing, what they're saying, and then we'll get Lloyd up for a question.
Yeah. You know, I would say that right now we are cautiously optimistic. I mean, to Tom's point, you know, we all suffered starting in March, really through kind of the end of Q3 of 2020. That was the hardest hit part of the economy. And so we're going to have, it's really going to be fall before we have kind of not even apples to apples, but at least both in the fruit bowl, so to speak, in terms of comp opportunities, obviously less political. But right now, kind of the leading indicators that are providing for some optimism are that we are starting to see, you know, both national avail business pick up. We're seeing local agency avail business pick up. And that's a really small part of Salem's business, because most of our radio stations are very direct sales radio stations. And that's, I guess, where there's even more optimism, because we're seeing those local advertisers, you know, the guys and girls that are handwriting the check for the advertising are starting to come back. And I don't want to overplay my hand on that. You know, it's not gobs of that right now. And oh my gosh, we're all it's all back to normal. It's not all back to normal, mm-hmm. but it is way better than right. it was certainly way better than it was in last year at this time, but also better than it was even in Q4. And quite frankly, better than it was in January of 21. And so, you know, we're starting to see some light. I'm happy about that. To Tom's point, I also think, though, that this pandemic forced our industry to really look at what else can we be doing? What else should we be doing? Not to mention the fact that radio lived up to its goal of being there, you know, go back to the roots of radio, public interest, convenience, and necessity. And we had the opportunity to be that. We had that opportunity to be that friend, to be that informant, to make sure people knew what was going on, and to also provide them with hope and truth and, a reprieve from the bad news of the pandemic. And so I'm really proud of our industry, because I think we've done a great job. And I also think it's given us the opportunity to innovate.
By the way, both David and Tom are on our leaders list, which comes out April the 5th, and the top 20 leaders, and both David and Tom are on that. I didn't mean to interrupt, Tom, so go ahead jump in there.
Kind of dovetailing with what David said, and looking at, some different sales operations and different sales cultures, that I've seen, particularly during this period. It's been very fascinating to see how this has changed from, the transactional sales process, for example, to, local direct. And what do those experiences look like for advertisers? And where have we been able to identify really terrific sellers for example, who have been able to work through this period and have had success. And I've seen a number of terrific account executives and talked to them about how they navigated through this and how they stayed close to their, you know, their advertising partners, and also the you know, kind of the stations themselves. What was their strategy? How did they communicate? And in many cases, how did they hold the hands of those advertisers to generate that loyalty that will pay off in the future? You know, there's been, you know, certainly a number of things, including time banks and all kinds of things during this period of time that radio has been a real true partner to advertisers. So it's really important to remember that and also to really kind of celebrate it.
We got Lloyd up on stage. He had his hand raised first. We have a couple of questions. And as you probably heard before, if you get pulled up on stage, just mute your mic until it's time to ask your question. But go ahead, Lloyd, jump in.
Man, so much fun, these guys. Ed, I want to thank you for having these two individuals on your first Clubhouse event. They certainly are a great introduction to having this conversation about radio. I love the revenue question. I don't want to get too far away from that. I do believe that based on what I've seen with my clients, that your relationships will fully determine the speed of your recovery. My question, though, is for David. It kind of goes back to the podcasting a little bit. I think that Salem has a unique fast lane set of opportunities in podcasting. So that makes them very interesting in terms of potential innovation that can be turned into audience adaption and revenue. Are the personalities at Salem engaging for podcasts? In other words, do they want to do it? Or is there some resistance from some of them? Are they uncomfortable with it? You know, we all have these issues with air talent from time to time. And can you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing or the work that's being done to create vision and architecture for these podcasts hosted by these individuals?
Thanks, Lloyd. David?
Yeah, thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate your question. You know, first off, in terms of our radio host's desire to do podcasts, I would, in all transparency, say, you know, your mileage may vary. Some of them are really excited about it and embrace it and get it from the start. Charlie Kirk is a great example. I mean, he was doing a podcast before he did radio. He clearly understands the value that podcasting brings to the table and understands, you know, the fact of, you know, look, being on a couple of hundred radio stations across the country doesn't hurt either. And by the way, it also doesn't hurt your podcast following. So, you know, I think he's a great example of somebody who kind of sees the vision of both. And other hosts have varying degrees of that. I think probably the inhibitor or the barrier to entry for some of the hosts is just the workload. You know that 3-hour network show or that 3-hour or 4-hour local show that you do. You know, it's not like you get on the air and you only work 4 hours a day. There's a lot of work. If you're doing a good radio show, there's a lot of work that goes into that. A lot of work beforehand, a lot of follow up afterwards. I think sometimes our talent can be underappreciated for what it takes to do a quality program and to do it 5 days a week, right? So I think there's a, you know, some of them say, I'd love to do it. I just don't really have the time to do it. Can't you repurpose some of what I'm already doing and turn that into a podcast? And then we have others that have, you know, they're like puppy dogs with a, you know, a bag of toys. They're all excited to do additional things like podcasting. So, you know, I think our job, kind of back to what you asked about the vision, is to work with the individual talent. So those that say, I'd love to do this, I'd love to create additional content that's podcast only content. Fantastic. Let's work with you. Let's bring Phil Boyce, who's a tremendous, at least on the, you know, on the talk side, you know, a tremendous, you mm-hmm. know, asset for Salem. Let's bring Phil in and let's talk about what that podcast can look like. We bring in Marcus Brown from our company to work with them as well. Marcus really understands both, you know, quality programming as well as the nuts and bolts of podcasting and how to turn that into something great. And the two of them, Phil and Marcus, make a great team for working with our podcasters and working with our other hosts who want to do it. So we embrace those that really want to do it. And then those that kind of want us to repurpose the content that they already have, we look for those opportunities too, whether that means simply taking their radio program and stripping out the commercials, or it means taking kind of best of segments from today's show and turning those into snack size podcasts. Those are all things that are a part of the vision and in the works.
Great stuff, David. Let's take one more question and see if we can get Mark Steckman, if he's still there. Mark is with the he's with the Business Beyond the Boardroom radio show. Mark, you're on live with David and Tom.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I'm Mark Steckman with Beasley Media Group in Tampa, Florida.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark. We are
really at an exciting time right now in the world of audio. In particular, you guys hear me okay?
Gotcha. It's not perfect, but we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. We're in an exciting time right now in regards to audio, in particular the spoken word. It's the intersection of broadcast, radio, podcasts, and now a digital platform like Clubhouse. What can we in the radio industry learn from all of this interest in the spoken word, in particular relating to broadcast radio and how we can improve our spoken word formats? Mark Steckman, Beasley Media Group, Tampa, Florida.
Mark, I'll take this one. And that's a really, you know, a really good question. I think that there's particularly with spoken word programming, there is a great way to extend that experience with people that you know, that really get it and get their audience and can be true to what they do, and also maybe express a different part or part of their personality or things that they're able to do. I also think on the music side, there are experiences that you wouldn't normally be able to have over the air because of what you're all about in terms of the amount of music and as part of what that experience is. So I think that, you know, there's, whether there's interviews and you know, different kinds of special interests that actually tie specifically back to the brand. I mean, what a terrific opportunity we have. I mean, it's so important to be able to connect in these personal ways. And, you know, Dave mentioned before, which I think is a really important thing, is that, you know, in the leadership positions, we bring more and more toys, and we say, okay, now you got to play with all these toys. And, you know, different people take this you know, differently. So you might have a talent, for example, who, you know, does not want to do it. And, but I find that a lot of the people that you talk to, the reason why they don't want to do it, or they're maybe a little bit more shy about it, or you know, unsure about it, is because they haven't really been taught how all of this flows. How does the communication flow? How does our use of media flow now? How do we do that? And then the other part of it is lack of support. So if you haven't taught the people the overall vision and how all these things work together, and then, you know, you go to the next level, and that would be, how do you support it? How do you support something like that? So I think building it in the infrastructure, there has to be a way to support the talent to be able to do this in a way that makes sense. And I think you have to put all of the stuff on a chart. I mean, you really have to kind of chart it out and say, which of these different platform buckets, if you will, do we fill, and how do we do that in different ways in order to expand the journey for a user or a listener around all of these different experiences. I think once you do that, I think there's a lot more buy-in, because it makes a whole lot of sense.
Let's take another, David, if you don't mind, let's take another call. I don't even know if you call it that, but Krista Hayes is the executive producer from the Ed Lover Morning Show, and I wanted to see if we could get her up there. Krista, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, everybody. This is such a good room. I'm so happy you all are here.
Thanks. So what's your question for Tom and David?
Tom and David, I want to ask a D&I question, if that's okay. I am with Intercom Chicago, and there's a lot of initiatives that are being kind of implemented nationally, and it's kind of hard to see them trickle down locally. So I don't know if this is something that you all can speak to as far as our on-air initiatives locally. We just really want to kind of expand our D&I representation here, especially in Chicago. Our listenership in Chicago is split evenly, 30% across all different types of races, whether it's Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, etc. We just have an even listenership. So do you all have any suggestions to kind of, I don't know, just have that D&I effect really, really permeate and resonate and actually have some change coming into 2021 going into next year?
Thanks, Krista. David, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. You know, look, I mean, diversity inclusion is so important. I know, you know, the NAB as an example, named a few months ago, Michelle Dukes as the, diversity and inclusion officer within the NAB, a newly created position. So I can tell you that, you know, first off, it's not just of interest to you, but it's of interest to the industry. It's of interest to the National Association of Broadcasters. Clearly, how that manifests itself on the air is a little bit more challenging to be transparent. Because again, I think it, you know, they call them formats for a reason, right? They call them formats for a reason. And so if I'm listening to the country music radio station, you know, in my market, or one of the three country music stations in my market, I don't necessarily want to hear on that station the Rolling Stones, because that's not why I came to that radio station. And so I think, you know, while we, and it depends, I guess, on what your question is, it's how does it manifest itself on the air? I think part of it is, well, talk to me about the format of that radio station, because if the format of that radio station is a certain format, then listeners are coming there expecting to find a certain sound to it. And, I think it's hard to be all things to all people all the time. We have to be true to the brand and product that particular radio station is, and stay there. Now, I do think when it comes to what else we do, you know, what does the makeup of our office look like? What does the makeup of our employees look like? That's where it's important that we have a clear and diverse understanding, to make sure that we're not missing something in the marketplace.
And if I could dovetail on that, Krista, I look at it very similarly to David, and there is big interest, by the way, with investors in making sure that there's a D&I plan. That's very prominent and in the business plan. And one of the things that we've discussed in our company and actually have been doing quite a bit of research and work on a grassroots level is to understand in a market and the surrounding counties, what are those needs? Because we can, obviously we have the formats that we need to do, but to Dave's point, in terms of education and in terms of bringing in a more diverse workforce, what ends up happening is that ends up affecting in a very positive way your overall presentation, the overall things that you're doing on the air, which is actually more helpful to your station and to the market and to the experience. It's extremely important to do that and have that in that purpose in mind. So yes, from an advertiser standpoint, it's important. From a listener standpoint, it's important. All of this stuff framed properly. When I say properly, I mean yes, they all, you know, kind of go down through the formats and that type of thing. But in terms of your overall presentation, which is greatly shaped by the, you know, the diverse workforce that you employ, it makes a difference. And it's, and maybe it's subtle and subtle, but it's moving things in the right direction. And based on the way the demographics and the composition of our country is concerned, we've got to do that. We've got to catch up.
I have one more question for you before I let you go. David and Tom, I know you have radio stations to run, and I appreciate we're already 45 minutes in. I'd like to get some feedback from everybody in the room today. If you think we should keep doing these on Friday at 9 o'clock, you could send an email to Ed Ryan, the editor at Ed Ryan, the editor at gmail.com, and let me know if you think it's worth your time to keep doing these on Fridays at 9 o'clock. And the question, David and Tom, I have for you is it's been kind of a rough year, I would say, for a lot of people out there. And not only with the pandemic, but radio had to lay off some people that probably won't be getting their jobs back. How do you keep the people that you have now motivated?
Well, I think it's, there's a number of ways that we have to do it. I think motivation always, to me, starts by understanding. We need to understand where our people are, you know, what's on their mind, what keeps them up at night when they leave the office and go home to the people that they love and care about, what's important to them. And I think motivation always starts with that. A lot of times people kind of want to throw out, certain motivational things that may not necessarily connect with people, because that's just not what excites them. It's not what drives them forward. And so I think motivation always starts with understanding kind of what time it is for the employee base that we have. And then from there, it's in how do you communicate to them? Right now, to me, the biggest thing that I can do in motivating people is to understand that it's hard, that it's optimistic and it's good and there's a lot of promise going forward, but also understanding that I understand that it's hard and really kind of walking along that tightrope. I can't give anybody a pass on not getting the job done, but if I also am like, things are great, go out there and get it all done, and not recognize that it's a challenge, then I appear to be ignorant and blind to the issues. And so for me, motivation right now is kind of a balancing act of not giving anybody an opportunity to not get the job done, but also being compassionate to the realities.
Great stuff. Great stuff, David. Thanks for that. Tom, you get the last word on this.
Yeah, absolutely. The motivation looks different. It comes dressed differently depending on the person. And the best thing that I have seen or can do or have done is to you have an opportunity, particularly during this time, to have separate conversations with individuals and understand what does motivate them. You can stop down now, which is really great, and actually have a conversation of what is it that you're looking to do? What kind of opportunities do you see? What does that look like for you? What are actually, some of the things you're most afraid of, or what are the things that, we can help with? I think that just spending a lot of time also working on the opportunity that we have ahead and, sort of imagining what that can look like moving forward is motivational. But it's also just that, what are the touch points? Now, obviously, I'm dealing with a small team with, really just a handful of people, but we do spend a great deal of time sort of talking actually generally about what general life is looking like for people right now in terms of just what does a day look like and what are the challenges that you have. And a lot of times when you peel that back a little bit, you can sort of get to the root of what the future looks like, and And it's a great opportunity to express that you genuinely care and that you can help people be ready for the recovery.
Well, what did you guys think? We went 20 minutes longer than I expected, and we did the questions, the calls without a call screener.
We could have been pranked.
Appreciate you both coming in, David Santrella and Tom Langmeier. This is our first Clubhouse Club Room session, and we look forward to getting some feedback at edryantheeditor@gmail.com on whether you think we should continue doing these every Friday. Dave and Tom, thanks very much, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And for folks that are still interested in hearing more about Clubhouse, Mike McVeigh has a blog about Clubhouse that will be posted to the Radio Inc. website on Monday morning. And don't forget, July 13th through the 15th, a brand new conference that we're going to be hosting, a virtual conference all about podcasting. Day one on the 13th will be the basics, and day two on the 14th and the 15th will be all interviews with podcasters that are making money. And this isn't just the big name podcasters that are in networks. This is an average podcaster here and there, and they're going to tell you exactly how much work they put in, how much time they put in, and how they're making money at it, so that radio companies all across the country can take advantage of the growing popularity in podcasting and make money at it, which is the key. So again, thanks to everybody joining us in the room, and let us know what you think. And thanks again to David Santrella from Salem and Tom Langmeier from Great Lakes Media. And everybody have a great weekend. Bye-bye.